Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. April 2nd is World Autism Day, and April is Autism Month here in the United States, a day to acknowledge the challenges and opportunities experienced by people on the autism spectrum. The disorder also includes a range of conditions characterized by some degree of impaired social behavior, communication, and language. It involves a narrow range of interests and activities that are both unique to the individual and carried out repetitively. The condition begins in childhood and tends to persist into adolescence and adulthood. Today we will discuss autism, and joining us via phone from New Jersey, outside New York City, is Dr. Usifo Edward Ashisha, the clinical director at the International Training Center for Applied Behavior Analysis, located in Lagos, Nigeria. The center offers educational training and neurobehavioral intervention services for people with autism, traumatic brain injuries, and other developmental disabilities. Dr. Ashisha, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Linan.
It's great to have you with us. Also joining us via phone from Los Angeles, California, is Susan Quizera. She is founder of New Life Foundation, dedicated to create a state-of-the-art day program for children and young adults with cognitive developmental challenges while raising awareness for both parents and the community at large in Uganda. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Linod.
It's great for you to join us from Los Angeles. We will discuss autism in a moment, but first, here is an overview.
My son was having some behavioral issues in school, and we didn't know what it was. We just knew he was struggling, he was having a tough time.
Levi was saying hi and bye and kitty and tree, and right about the same time he started walking, he just stopped. Any sort of communication just went away around 16 months.
The symptoms may differ. However, Odaiche Onyeke and Megan Dahlberg's sons have the same condition, autism spectrum disorder. Autism affects the brain's normal development. As a result, children and adults with autism have difficulty interacting socially, communicating, and controlling their behavior. Over the years, autism has puzzled researchers, challenged therapists, and left many families with unanswered questions, such as, what causes autism?
There's been a lot of research on the cause. We know what's not doesn't cause it. Vaccines do not cause it. There's questions of environment. There's questions of the genetic makeup of someone. But the actual cause is an unknown.
Scott Badesh is the president of the Autism Society of America. He says there have been some improvements in addressing the condition over the years, such as more global awareness. However, many challenges remain.
There's a problem, and I would argue it's probably worldwide, that when you look at statistics about who gets diagnosed, poor people get diagnosed later, which then slows the ability of treatment. If you look at it from a parent perspective or someone who has to be involved in the care and the support of a family, there's a mixed bag. There's more services today than ever before, but there's nowhere near the services needed for all who need help. Autism is also a civil rights issue, and that's universal. That when you have 70% of adults with autism being underemployed or unemployed, that means they're living on wages below poverty.
The World Health Organization says, globally, one in 160 children has autism. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one in 68 children has autism in the United States. This includes one in 42 boys, compared to one in 189 girls. Observers say reliable data is hard to find for low- and middle-income countries, including those in sub-Saharan Africa. Overcoming the stigma of autism is another difficult challenge. So is awareness. Onyeke agrees.
Very important for the African community to know that this disorder exists in our community and that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to get help for your child. I think we need to just learn about what the symptoms are, what the signs are. You have grown adults living with autism that have no idea that they have autism.
There is no cure for autism, but there are treatments to help children and adults improve their condition. and treatment depends on each person's specific needs. Until it becomes possible to answer questions such as the exact cause of autism or why more boys than girls seem to be affected, parents like Levi's mother live with hope, celebrating each milestone.
And Dr. Ashisha and Susan, again, thank you so much for joining us. Let me start with you, Dr. Ashisha. We, in the report, I mentioned that there are no clear statistics in terms of how autism affects people in sub-Saharan Africa. Could you give us a sense of the epidemiology of this condition?
Right now, from the world, the worldometer, the world has approximately 1% of its population affected with autism and other developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. And it's about the range of 4.3 to 1 male to female ratio.
Okay.
Back to Africa, from the statistics, it's about 10 million African population affected by this disability, according to the World Health Organization, which has been referred to as something, a developmental disability pandemic, which is totally under-recognized, under-appreciated in its impact, and under-resourced.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And Susan, could you give us a sense of what prompted you to start to get involved? You are a specialist in the field of care for developmental disorder. Talk to us about the needs that you saw that prompted you to start.
Yeah, thank you, Linode, and everyone. It's the need definitely was there, but like some lady who just shared with us that awareness in Africa, you know, is not the best. But as we, you know, go into our field of work with the passion, I thought that, you know, it's needed also in Africa. Having worked here in the United States for almost 6 years now, working with young adults, you know, with behavior and different challenges, I really found out that we need to also take the awareness back home, because these children are there, but a lot of parents don't even know what it is. And being also actually had a sister who died at the early age, and we didn't know what she had, but, you know, as my experience now, I can relate to her condition or disability as autism. So my passion for autism, I think, came way back when I was young, growing up, watching my sister. And then when I came to the United States, I enrolled in programs of, you know, special needs children. And here I am working, continuing working with them. And, you know, two years and a half ago, I was able to identify a few parents back home in Uganda, and that's how New Life Foundation began.
Okay, and we'll talk more about the work that you do through your organization. But Dr. Ashisha, when we go back to the basic, right, there is so much talk about autism and Asperger's syndrome disorder. And one of the challenges that you hear a lot is even the very fundamental aspect of diagnosis. What can you tell us? Because even in developed countries, people say autism tend to be diagnosed a bit late. In Africa, this could be a challenge. Talk to us about diagnosis, how it is done.
First and foremost, when you have a child and it's not developing according to the normal milestones, what do I mean by this? You have a child at the age of 12 months, he cannot babble, he cannot gesture, that is point, wave, and grasp at the age of 12 months. Then he does not say a single word at the age of 16 months. Then he does not say two word phrases on his or her own at the age of 24, then there is loss of language and social skills, then you begin to suspect. So what am I saying? The diagnosis is not really supposed to be a doctor per se. The mother is the most potent observer of the child who will be able to spot where there's a developmental deficit. Once you have this as red flag, then the next thing is to visit a doctor or a teacher that is trained, or a behavior analyst, or a speech pathologist, or a psychologist.
Okay. And so the responsibility really is first in the hands of the mother or the parent.
Yes, because this child lives with the mother and parents right from the date of birth to whatever age this deficit has been identified.
Mm-hmm. Now, if a parent finds out that everything that you said, it's a check, so they want to go see a specialist or someone to get a proper diagnosis, what will the specialist look for? What will they do? What are the tools that they need to do that? Because if there is no appropriate tool to diagnose, that could be a challenge as well. So what does the specialist do?
Well, here is the problem. When we bring diagnosis, it's not just an issue of bringing out some papers and start performing as if you are a native doctor. The question is this. How is the functionality? That's what we're talking about. What is the functionality of this child vis-a-vis the age of the past? For example, if someone has substantial functional limitations in self-care, in receptive and expressive language, in learning, in mobility, in self-direction, and capacity for independent living and economic sufficiency, then there's a problem. You can make a diagnosis. It's not just, oh, this is autism, therefore, what can this child do at this age compared to his parents?
Okay.
And the result comes out.
Okay. And Susan, would you like to react to any of the thing that Dr. Ashisha said?
Yeah, thank you, doctor. It's really important for the mothers to be involved in this. I've been talking to a couple of young mothers back home, and, they intend to understand the problem, but also there's this other part of accepting it. You know, it's so hard for them to accept, you know, what the challenge of the child are, but I'm so glad that eventually they realize that, you know what, there is a problem, you know, on this child, and that's when they decide to go, you know, for assessment, you know, to be diagnosed by the doctors. But, you know, they have a big role to, you know, to play. And also, it's not just paperwork, like you said. You know, there are so many challenges, the way they develop, you know, activities they do. So it's really, it gets both parents and doctors or therapists to be on the same page, you know. And also, parents, I've seen a couple of parents, especially mothers, who have put aside their careers and actually changed into probably becoming a teacher or a behavior therapist or analysis because of their children. And there is a big difference, you know, with them, with their children, when they choose to go that route. So at the end of the day, it's both parents and, you know, doctors and people in the field to come together, you know, as we say, there's no cure, but there are other, you know, other things we can do, other treatments, you know, we can give to these children so that they can be, you know, better.
So, Dr. Ashisha, what is available in terms of treatment?
First and foremost, I really appreciate what Susan has said, and also the question you raised about assessment. Before you start talking of treatment, what are the ranges of assessment that you might want to make a determination about? First of all, you want to know how the maladaptive behaviors presented by the child have been learned.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you want to know the function the behavior is serving for the child. Let's assume that you have a child that cannot speak. The best way to draw attention of the mother to his own need or her need is to tantrum. It's one way. And two, we want to make a determination as to how the environment impacts that behavior. How do you react? Then how the skill deficit impacts the behavior, and the extent of which team approach will be developed. And finally, how social relationship or network will be built. This is one major area of assessment. Then, you want to talk of, like Susan has said, mothers are very important. There is need for transfer of technology. If I say technology, it's not computer. Training for mom to be able to be observant and know what to do. And even if the child is diagnosed and the child is being treated, he needs to liaise with the service provider to learn one or two tricks as to how to manage this child. That is training for that child, in this regard. Okay. And secondly, there needs to be ongoing assessment. It's not just one-time assessment. Therefore, if you know that your child cannot talk, and as it goes along, it can only produce about two or three words, then you monitor that. How is he progressing? Is he making progress or not making progress? That calls for ongoing assessment and also appropriate placement. If your child is functioning at level one, it is not okay to put that child on grade two or three. You have already disabled that child more. A child that's supposed to be in primary one, you cannot put him in primary six. Now, if you now know the limit with all these ones, then you now have to start talking about treatment plan in education, call it IEP. If vocation, talk a vocational plan. Regarding behavior, call it behavior support plan. Then if you put the child in a home, you talk about ADL, activities of daily living. This needs to be developed. It should be child-specific. But the problem we have in Africa, we are so much engrossed in people having PhDs. When your child, doesn't have the requisite skill to match up with what you want the child to become. So inappropriate placement is one of the major problems again. Now, when people like Suzanne out there, I appreciate her job out there, are providing services, parents come around and say, hey, I want my child to be in grade whatever. Whereas they don't have the requisite skill to get to that level. So individualized planning, be it vocational, be it behavior, be it education, that is IEP, becomes very, very important in this regard. Secondly, like what Susan is doing in Uganda, are there development of resource materials. Very important. You cannot take a child to a school where there are no appropriate resources that is needed. This resource is not just computer. There are some resource materials that are specific to Africa in particular that are culturally friendly and culturally sensitive. So, again, that is another aspect of things you need. And monitoring the progress continuously as you go along. What do I mean by this? You ask yourself, after about 3 months, is the intervention strategy you are giving to the child, is it working now, or how is it going to work for him in future?
Yes.
Is the child happy? Child productive? Is the child acquiring new friends? Is the child developing new skills? Is he able to function at home and in the community? If you are able to provide strict answers to that, you're making some progress.
So let me ask you this, Susan. I mean, Dr. Ashisha mentioned so many important aspects of this. Individualized planning is so important because one thing that we keep in mind for those who know a little bit about autism is that no two persons on the spectrum have the same needs in terms of treatment because each person is different from the other. But when you have a center such as yours and you cater to the community and one specific group, how do you address each child's need? How are you able to provide as much as possible to each child to help them improve in their situation?
Thank you, Linode, and thank you, Doctor, so much for those important points you have made. Actually, I've realized, Linode, that no matter what we do, I think we need to focus, especially in Africa, to focus on early childhood intervention. This is very important, and I really feel that I'm going to focus on this for the next few years because, you know, when you give these children early intervention, it's going to open so much for you and the parent. So knowing that, okay, this child at 2 years, probably she's not or he's not speaking, we need to focus on the speech first, you know, one thing at a time. So as much as they grow up, then we identify the skills, where their weaknesses are, what we need to work on, you know, their physicals, their, you know, speech, their behavior. So it's until we put in the early intervention so that we can actually have a clear picture on what we are doing. Right now, I've started getting young children at the center whereby I didn't have them. And this is where my focus is now, you know, getting to know that, to intervene at the early age and focus on one little thing at a time. You know, I was talking to a mother and she was telling me, you know, as I feed my child, and she started at the age of one and she's writing at the wall the words, you know, the cat, the dog, the food, you know, nap time, those kind of things. So she's going around her house and speaking these words to her child. And the child is able to identify slowly by slowly. And this is a child who was diagnosed by a Down syndrome. But as we speak right now, this child is 16 and she's in the normal school, one of the best. So, you know, I try to identify and work on these children individually, looking at their skills, looking at their strengths, what can we work on? They, you know, one thing at a time, not hurrying into, you know, looking at, oh, when are they going to speak? The behavior, you know, there is a child who joined us at the center, and he came in with all this medication, you know, medication. He's being raised with a single mother, and the mother is also stressed, and all she can do is to give the son medication. And you know, when he joined the center, 3 weeks after, she was able to get off the medication and come along with other children. What am I saying here? We need to identify their environment, like the doctor said, not only behavior, or the environment also matters a lot. You know, these children are being kept in their homes, and what are they doing? They are getting frustrated, they are hyper, they are screaming, and poor mother is going to end up putting this child on medication. So I am really happy that we can identify, these children can identify the places where they feel comfortable and relate themselves to, you know, other children. And that's how we are coming up, Renaud, you know, doing what we are doing. And through experience and bringing these children on board, we'll be able to identify each and everyone's weakness, strength, and skills, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Dr. Ashisha, I know that earlier you said we will talk about treatment later, and we've been talking about it to some extent. At your center in Lagos, when parents come and see you, because there is a lot of stigma attached to autism, just like with many other conditions, what do you do? What do you tell them? And how are you able to overcome the cultural misunderstanding and really care for these children so that the parents can have the confidence to abide by what you tell them, but also take their children outside?
The problem is this. It's like even in the medical profession, they look at the management of autism from how do you call it, therapeutic point of view, medical point of view, where you just give the medication, then the autism goes away. If it fails to do that, then if the child fails to make some improvement, then parents just fall back to the fact that this illness or thereabout is being caused by either witches, wizards, or spiritual forces. This, we find it quite difficult to separate it from service provision right away. And it's not very easy for you to say, hey, we give an education, So the parent just one-time education, then it goes. So what is the trick? We try to train some parents. We do some training. We get the knowledge in the lowest level, basic level, which you call RBT, Registered Behavior Technician. They may not write the board exam, but once they have met the basic training, they begin to have an understanding that the presentation of the child is not caused by witches or wizards. That is that. Mm. Also, even the fathers also share the whole thought. A woman has a child that is in the spectrum, automatically either due to family pressure, they say, oh, the woman was not faithful to the man. Then it creates a lot of problems. Right now, we have major problem, shortage of competent ABA professionals in Africa. Big one. That's applied behavior analysis, which is one of the major protocol subjects that has been validated to help to manage these cases. For example, I have some data with me here in Africa. Algeria, we only have one RBT, Registered Behavior Technician, in African continent. In Botswana, we only have one BCAB, Board Certified Assistant Behavior Analyst. In Egypt, we have 5 Registered Behavior Technician and 2 BCABA and 3 BCBA.
Okay.
And in Egypt, in Kenya, we have 2 BCBA.
Okay.
Malta, 2 RBT. Ghana, we have only 1 BCBA.
So we see that there is a need.
We have 16 RBTs and 3 BCBA and 5 BCBA. No, 3 BCABA, 5 BCBA and 2 BCBAD.
Okay.
In Portugal, Dr.
Ashisha, we're going to run out of time, unfortunately. So, I really get your point where there is a need.
A big need.
Yes.
Of competent service provider. Even when they take their children to America and that child is diagnosed, it comes back to Africa. Who provides that service?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is competent. That is a major problem.
So then, moving forward, what would you like to see? Let me start with you, Susan, before we end the show. What should be the priority, or what would you like to see, very briefly?
Yeah, very briefly. Thank you, Doctor, again. And I will just conclude with saying that I really thank what Africans are doing now, Linod, because like this PACA, the conference that is coming up, you know, end of April, you know, it's all Africans coming together. You know, the first African conference on autism, and I believe that this conference is not going to leave African people the same, because we are bringing in researchers, doctors, you know, therapists, children, and mothers, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's really going to be very good.
Very good, very good. And Dr. Ashisha, very briefly.
All right, now we need trained manpower. We need money for funding. We need materials and institutions. We need research institutions. And we need effective communication out there in Africa. And we need equal time. We need energy supply.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. Some of the major things we need. And the political will.
Okay, so basically we need a lot. We still are far behind when it comes to autism, and we need a lot to help parents and those who live with the condition. Dr. Edward Ashisha and Susan Quizera, thank you so much to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you, Lilian.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank both our guests for joining us today. For more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. And we can keep the conversation going at facebook.com/voahealthchat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Bonsa Tufa and engineer Michael Dubensky. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA.